All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of O365A. In this episode, we're going to be talking with fellow MVP, Microsoft MVP, Matt Wade. So Matt, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe, how has COVID been for you and, personally and from a professional perspective?
Sure. My name is Matt Wade, originally from upstate New York, grew up here. Went away for a little bit to school and then spent a little time in the Caribbean and Virginia and then came back to upstate New York as of last couple of years. I think most people probably know me for my infographics on Office 365, but my day-to-day job is actually on the chatbot realm. So I do a lot of adoption help, training, whatnot within Microsoft Teams. And let's see, I am completely out bearded, I just realized. I'm the only one with a clean face here.
It's coming in. Something
up there. It's all right. It's all good.
And let's see, because COVID for me was day to day, not a huge difference because I've been working remotely for the last couple of years anyway. My girlfriend has been working from home, which has been new. So I'm glad when we got the apartment that I specifically got an office space, set up in it. But I think it just came down to, our parents are in the high,
High risk
zone, or yeah, high risk zone. Yeah, exactly. So we've been doing lots of errands and stuff for them, but they're normally pretty stubborn, but they were not this time. So actually things have been going pretty well with respect to that. So I can't complain very much. We're both still employed. We had no issues there. And it's been, we got a cat. How's that?
Yeah, I've heard there's an influx in animals and foams now because of this. Awesome. So, it's great that everything's going okay with you guys. So I guess I want to ask, my first question would be to you is, I know you have sort of a little bit of a etiquette guide as well. And so what is your approach towards team user etiquette? So, how did you, sort of come up with it and what is your approach to it?
I think it comes down to when our organization started using Teams back in 2017, it was one of those, let's just sit down and agree to how we're going to do this. And earlier in my career, I worked in an organization of 15 or so thousand users, and I was working SharePoint adoption. And there's one thing when you're talking about a huge organization like that, it's another when you're just talking about your team doing stuff. But if there was one thing we realized, it was we needed to agree on how we wanted to use Teams. Were we going to use email, or we're going to, keep using email to some extent, or we're going to push emails into Teams and all of that stuff. And I think the etiquette aspect for me was, kind of learning through trial and error what are good practices and not so good practices and identifying those good ones as recommendations and etiquette, but also making that etiquette aspect part of the let's all sit down and agree that we want to do this. Let's hold each other accountable, slap some wrists if we have to, and stick to it and actually talk about how we want to get to how we want to do work and get stuff done, which I think most organizations don't do that. I think, all the retreats that I've been on, for every trust fall that I've had, I wish we had 15 minutes of discussing how often so-and-so emails me and I hate it, that kind of thing. So I think that's kind of where it came out of was nobody should just assume that everybody knows how to do it the right way unless it's written down someplace.
Awesome.
Oh, that's perfect. As we're kind of moving into the bot side of the conversation, where do you recommend, someone that's learning to start out with bots? What path should they go down? I know there's the Power Virtual Agents, there's the Bot Framework Composer, there's the AppBot. There's kind of a wide variety of paths to get into bots, at least in the Microsoft ecosystem.
I would say if you just want to get started and try it out, just go straight to Q&A Maker because it's built to let you create a bot based on your content and take that as your first step. If you like it, great. You're probably going to like it even more if you get into the logic and the more deeper language modeling. But Q&A Maker is a great first step. It doesn't cost a lot of money to start. In fact, it's free if you want to use the free trial within Azure. It's just super simple to use. Almost anybody with almost any user could use it. Being able to build the bot itself in Azure requires an Azure account, but still, I would say get started there. And then if you decide you actually want to start doing, more actionable things, kicking off workflows, processes, approvals, submitting tickets, things like that, then look into whatever your next step is for whatever your skill set is, right? So PVA for, you know, kind of simple at bot, the one that I work on is good for meeting the same needs as PVA, but being much more scalable because you're still using like the enterprise level language modeling tools. And if you want to get into the coding aspect to it, that's totally fine too, but way above my pay grade.
Nice. Matt, you know, given we've got like, you know, a huge amount, a large percentage of the population working from home right now, like what advice would you have for the person that's new to remote working? You know, tips and tricks or just general advice?
Okay, the big one for me is absolutely stay in contact with your colleagues. You will be losing the bump into aspect of work, and that's a tough one. It sounds corny or kind of weird to say maybe, you know, have an ongoing meeting all day long, and not one where you're being like overseen by your manager, because I know some organizations are doing that, probably not in such the most trusting way. But being able to have that sort of, hey, anybody know how to do XYZ within that project team that you work with or the business unit that you happen to work in? And if nothing else, just have a couple friends that are reasonably close by that you can ping and just say, hey, got a couple minutes for a phone call? Because I think for me, the biggest aspect of this has been the lack of human interaction. You know, I'm a member at a co-working space locally, and one of the main reasons for that is so I can get out of the apartment and not just be here all day long. My girlfriend's been working in the office 2 or 3 days a week, and I think that that's like that perfect middle ground where you actually have human interaction, but you can still get a bunch of stuff done when you're home, working from home, which I think not everybody, but most people kind of look at work from home right now, especially if they're new to it, as, ooh, this is nice. I've been able to get things done without distraction. But there's still that lack of, you know, ideation, innovation, things like that. Those things happen from serendipitous bump intos in hallways and things like that. So I think that's probably going to be the biggest one for me.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. And shifting gears a bit, Matt. So let's talk about private channels. Of course, it was the most asked for Teams feature for a long time. And being a Teams user myself in an organization, I see why. Many times you have a team and then you just need conversation or collaboration restricted to a subset of that team. But I'm just curious, in your experience, now that it's been out for many months, what scenarios are you seeing that work well for private channels or don't work well? Or what are they being abused at all, or any problems? Or what do you see in the field?
I felt that private channels was a mistaken request and that people would regret asking for it because there's no easy way to do it. And unfortunately, the solution that was provided to us is good and they did exactly what they needed to do to make it work the way that it should. But you know, I think the biggest complaint is, oh, it's so complex. Why does it have to be so complex? And the answer is because it's a complex request and everybody will come back and say, no, Slack has it. And it's like, well, no, a Slack channel is a team, not a channel in Teams. It's kind of an odd, naming oddity, I guess, within this. And it means that, you know, if you want to have a management channel where the person that's the team owner, who is most likely not in management, can't have access to that conversation or the conversations in that channel, can't have access to those files, then you're going to be stuck with a safe space for that management team in the conversations, and they're going to have their own site in SharePoint because you can't just give them a separate library because the team owner would still have access to that library in SharePoint. I think it can be well used in certain situations as long as it's strategic. I think that management example is actually a bad reason to use it because, not to belittle management people out there, but like they're usually not going to be the ones spending a lot of time learning how the tools work from that end of it. And you have more potential for error or mistakes being made and not knowing that that was the case. I think, you know, like using it for like finance or like personnel issues within a team is usually pretty good because those people may not be, less connected to the technology. But I think everything within Teams for me always comes down to if you're going to do something, do not make ad hoc decisions, make it strategic, write it down, decide that you like convince yourself that you need it and that you can't live without it. Because I was always one to say I would just fall back on make another team. And I realize that there's, you know, 10,000 IT pros out there that just shiver when I say that, but it doesn't cost anything. You know, you can put retention time periods on those things and have them be deleted after a certain time period. And, you know, I don't think I think the paradigm has shifted from you have to give people provisioning limitations to give them whatever they want, but give everything a death date because now you have those tools built into them, which you didn't have necessarily as easily on-prem.
Yeah. Well said.
So switching back to the bot side of things, because you live and breathe that. What are sort of the maybe the top three scenarios, or you know, in the enterprise that you see maybe in around Office 365 and Teams that you know people are sort of building or utilizing bots for?
Sure. First one, like by far the most common one, is going to be IT support internally. So being able to place the common questions that you're getting, like the help desk would be getting, into Q&A Maker for the simple stuff, and then for things that require more troubleshooting or like having a standard operating procedure for troubleshooting steps, that would be more of a logical workflow. Opening a ticket in the background while you're doing so, updating the ticket as you go through step 1 through 5 or whatever, maybe running a little sentiment analysis in the process if somebody's a little bit too peeved, and their terminology is coming back a little bit more angrily, kick the ticket up to a human, that kind of thing. And then customer service in general, maybe not from the team side of things, but putting a bot out onto a website or even through text messaging is another big one, because that's kind of the same concept as just triaging or trying to automate the question and answer process that would be super common. The one that I kind of like the best is finance, or being able to do expense reporting and stuff like that. So like, you know, someday when we're all allowed to walk into a Starbucks again, getting that coffee and then taking a picture on our phone and uploading it through a bot and saying, I just spent this, and it can automatically do that, and I don't have to go into the portal. And, you know, I think most of us, when we travel, we all regret 2 weeks later that we didn't put anything into the system. And I now have, you know, $1,000 worth of travel stuff that I have to put in there. And that one's kind of fun because you can just kind of do one-offs, and while you're waiting in line for something, scan the receipt, throw it out, and it's already uploaded.
Awesome. Yeah, I didn't realize that they had that OCR type functionality in that you could sort of build into it. That's kind of cool.
Well, the nice thing is you have all the Azure Cognitive Services at your fingertips, right? So like you can just ping any one of those services, and one OCR scan probably costs, you know, 0.00015 cents or something. And if that's going to get people to be more productive and more, I don't know, ahead of the schedule to get their stuff scheduled or put up, as opposed to wasting 4 hours or an afternoon on a Friday after 2 weeks of travel, I feel like that's worth it just from the, you know, hourly rate perspective of the person.
That makes sense. Thanks.
Yeah, you've mentioned a few of the Azure Cognitive Services like Q&A Maker, sentiment analysis. What are maybe some scenarios that might not be fronted with a bot that you've seen, you know, organizations truly harness the power of these new AI technologies?
So some of the really cool ones that I've liked is related to the vision analysis or the vision services that Azure Cog Services comes with. We had a demo that we did for an organization that wanted to use a bot for field service work. And you know, it didn't matter if it was a bot, it could be Power App, you know, fill in the blank. But the ability to, you know, as a field service technician, let's say he's out checking in on somebody's air conditioner and there's something broken in the air conditioner, the unit, and you can literally just take a picture or use the app and scan what they see in front of them to identify, okay, this thing is, you know, the, I don't know, coolant pump or something is dead, and you can take a picture of it. And Azure Cog Services can actually come back and say, based on what I just looked at, that's a coolant pump. And then automatically put in a request or look at what the stock is locally for the organization and say, okay, we have 3 left. I'm going to call dibs on one, you know, based on the time of day that it is today, he's going to go pick it up in the morning. And we're going to put in an order automatically for 10 more. So we always have them on the backlog ready for somebody to take action on, which I just think is the coolest thing. That was more of a demo. I haven't actually touched that in person, but just the potential there is fantastic. One of the other ones I thought was great was at Inspire last year. I think his first name is David, but his last name is Kellerman, and he was a professor in University of New South Wales, I think, in Sydney. And he was able to have a bot help out his students in answering engineering. It's an engineering course. Having gone through engineering, I feel like that was, I don't know, the level of technical knowledge needed to be able to help a student answer questions or like get help with some of the homework was just really incredible, because he was using machine learning The TAs would answer the questions at first, or the professor would as well. The bot would automatically record the answer and the question that was asked, identify the question or like the problem number that was in the homework, which each had a, like a QR code. So the students could scan the QR code, say, I have an issue with this. How do I do X? Get an answer. And then over the course of the semester, the bot just learned that. And now he's got a trained bot to work for every semester in the future. And it's not something you need for, you know, a classroom of, when I was in engineering school, we had 15 kids in my class, I think. But this class was like 500 students, right? So we're talking lecture quality experiences. And that one is real world. And that one to me was just like, wow, you know, being able to do that and automate so much. You know, a team of developers helping him, a services organization. But I think it was only a few when they had it done within like a couple months and ready to go. So I think that was super cool.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, indeed. You kind of touched on this, but like AI bots and automation capabilities, like obviously have really evolved. And case in point, you just mentioned the example from the university. But do you think that most organizations really, like two-part question, like do they understand what's possible? And next, are they ready to execute on it?
So when we do demos for potential customers, I'd say a good half of the time, it's somebody that's just sort of intrigued with the topic just because it sounds cool. And 50% of the issue is getting them over the speed bump of what use case do you have that could potentially be useful? Because a lot of people don't even think about what this type of technology could be used for. And if they do, usually it's a negative perception that comes with phone trees. You know, calling your bank and not getting an answer and, you know, no, I want to talk to a representative, that kind of thing, which if you really train your language model, it doesn't have to be that way. So I think getting people to understand what they want is sometimes a difficult portion, but a lot of them come in and go, no, I really want it for this. I know exactly how I want it to work. And it gets really exciting because now you've got somebody who's just really engaged, really has a great idea and wants to go do something with it. And then we kind of show them, by the way, it's not just language. You can bring in this vision aspect if you want to. And each of your organizations internally might have different use cases. Like that field service example is a good one for vision services. IT help desk, not so much, right? But they might use Q&A Maker a lot more than a field services organization would. So the ability to kind of meet the needs of everybody with all these services and that what I would kind of call stupidly low prices, you know, being able to pay just for what you're using. And each time you call one of these things, it's, you know, a thousandth of a dollar or cent, whatever the value is actually pretty cool.
For sure. Thank you.
Yeah. And just one last question on the automation front, because it's really interesting to see the evolution of sort of the whole Microsoft automation story in Microsoft 365. You know, they're introducing things like the power of virtual agents and the bot framework keeps evolving. One of the challenges I found a couple of years ago was enterprises were just too consumed with trying to get to Office 365. They weren't thinking beyond, you know, what it can do for automation scenarios and really enhance my business. But one of the things COVID has done, of course, is accelerate the adoption of a lot of the cloud solutions like Microsoft 365. Have you seen more interest in automation now that more companies are on Microsoft 365, number one? And number two, where do you see it headed in the next couple of years?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I think how many organizations are going to say, you know, who got me onto Office 365? Was it my change management group or was it a pandemic? And it's going to be, you know, 75% are going to say it was a pandemic. But you're right. And I think it's actually, I don't think it was done nefariously, but some of the things that Microsoft has done to make it incredibly easy to want to go automate something or build an app, something as simple as just being in OneDrive or SharePoint, you see a button that says automate. And now you've got, you know, how many hundreds of millions of more pairs of eyes than you did 6 months ago looking at that going, wonder what this button does. And they make it incredibly easy to get sucked into that drug, I guess. That in addition to the fact that they've been playing with the self-service licensing structure, which I totally get where they're coming from on that one. It wasn't necessarily the friendliest way to do it for the IT admins and the budget directors out there, but I think it was just yesterday we got the update saying that they could play around with some of the settings for that. But yeah, I think there's a major jump in that. I think just looking around like on YouTube or even you know, Reddit or a couple other communities to see how many people are interacting in, you know, Flow or Power Apps sort of roles is significantly increased. And I think that's only going to become more. I think it's going to lead to, I think as more cloud changes occur, it just looks to me as more job security for people like us, because it's that much more stuff to govern. It's that much more stuff to have to respond to if people start building business critical tools and the, you know, IT org isn't aware of it, and then something happens or somebody leaves the organization. So I see the growth happening a lot. And then I also see those organizations having to either be smart about governance up front, or they're going to be reacting to it afterwards, just like we all did back in the SharePoint, 2007-13 days. but yeah, I don't think there's going to be any sort of slowdown from that with the more people playing around in Office and Windows and all of those services.
Yeah, I agree. One of the things I think Microsoft has done a really, really fantastic job at is tying the automation vis-a-vis Power Automate into all the different workloads. So you can truly get end-to-end automation right through your whole business stack. And I think we'll probably see is more people do automation will become a business advantage. So I'll be a growth driver. Yeah.
I think another thing about that, though, I wish, and I love Power Automate. I'm in it all day long doing workflows and whatnot. The one thing that I wish there was a little bit better, starter packs or something for people. Like the templates are really, some of them are really good. But there are no standard business processes. Like if you go to the templates right now and you actually look at what the top, Power Automate templates are, I think the number one was the send me a reminder in 10 minutes. And, I have Siri for that. That's the only thing I use Siri for, is to tell her to remind me something, in X number of minutes. And the other one was send me a notification if my manager emails me. And like, don't get me wrong, important or whatever, but at the same time, like, what about the one where it helps automate my budget analysis every Friday, or my project management status update, whatever? And I feel like those are really big topics that so many professionals in different fields would have benefits from. And I think it would be great if, similar to how Bot Service actually put out that COVID-19 bot for the CDC, and then put it out there as like a template on GitHub and said, hey, you can do this, build off of this. It's all SME provided information, really smart people on this topic have vetted the content, and you can add to it if you want to. It would be great if they had some sort of like gallery for that, I think, for those people that are really just starting and going, what's something real life in my life right now that like could actually make me a little bit more productive? And I don't think the ones that are there that pop up very high are the ones to me that seem like, oh yeah, that just saved me a lot of time. Reminding me something in 10 minutes saved me nothing. And, getting a notification when my manager emails me gets me nothing as well, right? I guess it gets me a faster response to that person. But the amount of content is awesome. I just wish there was like a better centralized, I know they have a cookbook and things like that, but push it more as a community-based thing and whatever. But I think that would be a major improvement, especially as they want to get more and more actual end users, not just, power users in that have always been on top of these tools, but actual real people that go, huh, I wonder what I can do with this in my day-to-day life.
Absolutely. Just to add too, if they're serious about the whole citizen developer approach, the templates are great for getting started, but then it's like climbing Mount Everest to like change the time zone on a date.
I know. I know. Time zones are my worst enemy.
If they could have cookbooks to do some of that, it would be fantastic.
And you have to be an expert in like Excel macros and expression writing in Excel to even like work your way into Power Automate right now, because some of those things require such complex syntax writing, and it's like it's not even the same syntax. It's a different. I have to go look that up and have my own review. But anyway, that's just one of those gripes you get when you get into something and you really like it, right? You're gonna find that.
What's cool though, you see the foundations there, and it's headed in the right direction. It's all.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. So
yeah, definitely.
Anyway, I could talk automation all day, so I'll send it back to Hab to wrap it up.
Yeah, no, it's great, great discussion. I mean, I think the biggest thing for when you do any type of automation is having a problem to solve, and not just playing around with it for the sake of doing that. Like I tried that, and I was like, well, I'm not going anywhere, and I can't get anything really done. Not until I truly had like, I need to do this. How can I do it? And then you start working through it. But I agree, like a nice repository of
you know, templates by the community would be fantastic to get people started. But that being said, you know, thanks, Matt, for coming on. Really appreciate your insight with regards to, you know, the remote work and the etiquette and all your awesome knowledge on the AI and bots and stuff like that. Really appreciate you coming on and chatting with us today. And hopefully our listeners enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me. I hope to see you guys again sometime soon in the in person, whenever they allow us to go out into public once again. And I think that's not going to be till 2021, though, when we're looking at some of the conferences that have been pushed and whatnot. But we'll see.
Definitely. Yeah, we look forward to it as well. Anyways, thanks again. And thanks to everybody for listening in. And hopefully we'll catch you on our next episode.
Thank you.
Thanks everybody.